Welcome back to the Reconnect to Chaos stage. So we have our first talk after the opening right now. So, and this time we'll present Der Hagen about how to find the Norwegian Prime Minister in an anonymized contact tracing data set. So Der Hagen is a former member of our CCCP hackerspace here in Potsdam, and has now moved to Norway. And he will talk, tell us a little bit about this thing, about an anonymized contact tracing data set. And what else he told me is he is building up a network for democratic digitalization at ATTAC in Norway. So, what you can do during the talk, you can use the IRC's channel to pose your questions. Or RTC 2020 minus stream on Matrix, which you will find in the streaming website below. And then we will have a discussion with Der Hagen about his topic. And I'll do that in German as well. So, herzlich willkommen auf der Reconnect to Chaos Bühne. Der Hagen wird uns gleich vorstellen, einen Vortrag über die norwegische Premierministerin und wie man sie in einem anonymisierten Contact Tracing Datensatz finden kann. Der Hagen ist ein früheres Mitglied unseres CCP hier in Potsdam und ist jetzt nach Norwegen rüber geschiftet, dort gespawnt und wird dort genau. Und ihr könnt uns auf dem RTC 22 IRC-Kanal eure Fragen stellen, ebenso auf dem IRC 22 minus Stream im Matrix. Beides findet ihr, wenn ihr uns vom Stream zuschaut, unterhalb des Videos. Und da könnt ihr eure Fragen stellen, dann werden wir sie im Nachgang hier direkt im Anschluss beantworten. Und für die Menschen, die hier im Saal sind, es gibt ein Saalmikrofon und das könnt ihr dann hier an der Stelle nutzen. Dann wünsche ich euch viel Spaß mit dem Vortrag und genau, so you feel invited for the talk and let's go.
Hi, welcome to my talk about how to find the Norwegian Prime Minister in an anonymized contact tracing dataset. This talk is based on a paper I published at NISC22, the Norwegian Information Security Conference, just a month ago. And you might already have read that netspolitik.org article written by Ingo Dachwitz. That's also where you'll find a link to the actual paper if you want to know all the details. Well, since this is a talk about something that happened in Norway, this whole thing requires a bit of context. Norway, as many other European countries, decided to create a COVID-19 contact tracing app. They called it Smittestopp, which is Norwegian for like infection stop. And this solution was supposed to warn people that they have been in contact with somebody who tested positive afterwards. We had the same discussion in Germany. How do you build such a system while also respecting the user's privacy? And in Germany, we decided that phones having the app installed should see each other via Bluetooth and store all the data locally. That was an important privacy measure. In Norway, the approach to privacy is often a bit different, even though they underlie the same GDPR as we do in Germany. They collected GPS and Bluetooth contact data, so GPS is kind of new here, and they also uploaded the raw data to a central server. All the raw data, all the GPS coordinates, all the Bluetooth contacts uploaded to a central server controlled by the Norwegian Institute of Public Health. I'm going to refer to them as FHI since that's the Norwegian abbreviation. Well, as I said, Norway underlies the same privacy law, the same GDPR as Germany, so the Norwegian Data Protection Authority took a couple of weeks, just 7 or 8 weeks, to figure out that the system doesn't really appear to be proportional. Its value should be proportional to the invasion to privacy. And since there were other countries who solved the same problem in a much more privacy-friendly way, they said, well, at least temporarily, you are not allowed to collect that data any longer. And FHI, the Norwegian Institute of Public Health, said, well, okay, they kind of disagreed, but they said, we're going to stop collecting any data from that Smittestopp app. They also said, I marked it here, it's unfortunately in Norwegian, that they're going to delete all the data from the Smittestopp app. So the story could have been over here. That was in middle of June 2020, but things are a little bit more complicated than they seem right now. Because FHI wasn't the only one involved in creating this app. FHI had a couple of data processes. So for example, the development of the app was outsourced to Simula, which is a Norwegian research institute, and they got the task of developing the app. They were responsible for testing, maintaining and running the system. So supposedly they had access to all the data. There was also a data processing agreement between FHI and Simula. So I assumed when FHI announced to delete all the data that this would also include their data processes, like Simula, and everybody would just delete all the data they have. But apparently that is not what happened. So as far as I know, FHI actually deleted all the data. But Simula, in October 2021, so over a year after that announced deletion, published a paper in the scientific journal Nature Communication with this lengthy title here, Nationwide Rollout Reveals Efficiency of Epidemic Control Through Digital Contact Tracing. And what they did here, I'm gonna cite what they write in their introduction, is using a unique real-world contact data set collected during the rollout of the first Norwegian contact tracing app. So two things stand out here. First of all, they have access to a unique real-world contact data set. Apparently no other nation in the world decided that it's a good idea to collect such data, otherwise this wouldn't be unique. And the second thing is, apparently the data that was supposed to be deleted hasn't really been deleted. At least it's been used in research over a year after that announcement. So I decided to dig a little bit into what happened here and requested a couple of documents under the Norwegian Information Freedom Law. And what they say is that the dataset wasn't actually deleted, but well, anonymized. Two times actually, to be extra safe. And what they say here, it's again in Norwegian unfortunately, but what these text bubbles here say is that first all the device identifiers have been hashed. That's the first anonymization, and just for the record, hashing is not actually an anonymization method. The second anonymization process was taking all of these hashes and replacing them by random integers, but not by actually random integers, but that was done in such a way that each of these integers still points to the same device. So each telephone gets an index, they say here, and for each telephone, we still know all the data points that belong to it. So, that leads me to my research question. Can you really consider such a data set to be anonymized? And, I mean, most of you are kind of close to that Chaos Computer Club gang, so I guess you know about the dangers of data. But there were actually precise risks that were mentioned in the data protection impact assessment that I also got that FHI conducted themselves before they published the app. One of the risks here is R210, where they say it might happen that information about people at risks is disclosed, and that leads to dangers for life and health, with a moderate probability. So I guess that's something we should avoid at all cost. Also, if we figured out that this data set was not properly anonymized, then this R212 would also become interesting again, where they say that the value of this solution might not be proportional to the invasion to privacy. It's interesting that they mentioned this in their own DPIA, which is from before they published the app, because that's actually what the Norwegian Data Protection Authority concluded themselves. So I guess they weren't really surprised about that. But if it turned out that the data was actually not deleted in the first place and then not properly anonymized, this question, this legal question would come up again. Let me talk a little bit about my method, because I didn't get access to the data itself. Similar offers to share the data with other researchers under a non-disclosure agreement, but I'm not a research institution at the moment, I'm just an independent researcher, so I didn't get access to the data itself. What I used was a description of that data set from Simula's own paper that was quite precise. And I also want to point out that all data stems from Bluetooth measurements. So it seems like they actually deleted the GPS data, otherwise the whole thing would have been really trivial to conclude. Let's have a quick look at the data as they describe. And I just compiled an example data point here. What we have for each data point, for each record, is two device identifiers. Not at least random, but per device static numbers that can be linked to a specific phone. We just don't know which phone it actually is and who it belongs to, at least not yet. Then they aggregated the data on a daily basis, so we don't get access to all of the individual data points each time a phone recognized another phone, but they aggregated in a way that for each day we know the difference between the first and the last occurrence. So if you saw, if a device saw another device at 12 in the middle of the day and for the last time at 7 in the evening, it would just say, well, I've seen that device for like 7 hours, and not at which times and how often actually. Something else is the received signal strength indicator, the RSSI, that tells you something about the Bluetooth signal strength and how close these devices have been to each other. We get aggregated data about how often these devices have seen each other on that specific day. We get information about the type of device, in this case Android, or could also be iOS. And we get access to the date. Well, for the date, I need to mention they don't explicitly say we can assign each of these records to a specific date, but they have graphs like these, where they define different types of contacts and plot them on a graph with the date as the axis. So if you couldn't assign each of these records to a specific date, you couldn't plot such a graph here. Also, what they can do, for example, and what they do is selecting a specific period right after National Day until the end of the measurements. So if you had no idea about the date of these records, you just couldn't do that. So I included the date here, because I don't see any possibility how they could have done their research without having access to the date. Let's change the perspective a little bit. I mean, this looks a little bit complicated, but if we focus on a given entity A, so something that represents a phone, we get something like a contact graph. It looks like this Facebook graph on this picture here, as I say. This is not real data, this is illustrative. And if we pick out another entity B that A has been in contact with, what we see is the device types here, Android and iOS, and we see for each day whether they have been in contact with each other or not. For example, here on Monday and on Tuesday, 8 hours of contact, and on Saturday, no contact. So that might indicate that maybe A and B work together. So let's go a little bit into detail. Let's take such a device A and start on a Sunday. And what we might see is that A has a bunch of contacts that they have been seeing for 17 hours on that specific Sunday. So we'd assume, I mean, you see your flatmates or your family, people who live in the same household, for breakfast and then the last time when you go to bed. So these 17 hours you see here, that could indicate that these people live in the same household. There's one person with 24 hours of between the first and the last measurement, so the first time right after midnight, the second time right before midnight. So I would assume that these people sleep in the same room, or at least have their phones in the same room overnight. If we go to the next day, a bunch of other people might pop up with 8 hours of contact to A, the same on Tuesday and on Wednesday. So the indication that these might be co-workers of A kind of becomes clearer. the same on Thursday, but something else might pop up here 1 hour with an entity that doesn't have any other contact to the family or the co-workers. So that might be a little secret we might be uncovering here. So that might be a date in a cafe, or that might be a therapist that A is seeing on Friday. This one is gone again, just back to the co-workers, and on Saturday and Sunday back to the family. So I guess you would agree that there's a lot of structure and a lot of information visible in this, well, anonymized contact graph. So you already see that A is most likely not working from home, that A has a bunch of co-workers, these ones here, that A has a family, or at least five people living in the same household. Maybe a large family, or maybe some flatmates, or I don't know. This becomes particularly interesting when there's anomalies like A becoming sick. So if we have a look at that Tuesday, it might be that the work contacts are missing, even though it's a work day. And also what we see on the left is that the partner, or the supposed partner, is sleeping in another room. So I guess this might strongly indicate that A was sick. So now we're going to change perspectives. We're going to change perspective to a fictional employer who has an employee, Ulla Nordmann. That's the Norwegian version of Max Mustermann. And Ulla Nordmann is actually an identifiable person, since it's an employee, has an address, has a name, has a telephone number. And let's have a look at which kind of information the employee has about Ulla. Well, in this case, Ulla called in sick on three distinct and known days. You see that in the calendar here. Ulla also uses an Android phone, which the employee knows about. It is easy to spot if you work together, I guess. And then the first day of the availability of the app, on the 16th of April, Ulla posted a photo on the app of social media, just like Norwegian Prime Minister Erna Solberg is doing here on the 16th of April, actually. So, if Ulla got access to the dataset, how many could Ulla's employer actually figure out which of the entities represents the phone of Ulla? Well, let's first check how many Android users actually started using the app on the first day. And there's a bit of, the app started on the 16th of April, which is the blue curve, the leftmost point. But in the paper, the similar researchers actually say they just got access to the data starting from the second day. So, okay, not a big deal. I'm not actually sure if that's a mistake or not, but let's just say on the first day where we actually got access to data, there's these 250,000 remaining candidate entities, as I call them in my paper, that could represent the phone of Ulla. So that's just the Android phones that pop up on the first day of data availability. So, we didn't use these three sick days yet that Ulla's employer also knows about. So, if there's 250,000 candidate entities, how can we reduce this number further to only one entity that has these particular three sick days? Well, turns out we can actually do that, because one assumption I'm taking here is that if you just have an individual sick day, maybe if you have a migraine or something and you know it's going to be over tomorrow, what you would do in Norway is probably self-certify. You don't have to approach a doctor and get a certificate from a doctor, but you can just say, I'm going to stay home for one day, for example. And according to Norwegian statistics, the rate of these self-certified sicknesses are 0.5%. So if you take these 250,000 candidate entities and ask yourself, well, how many of these can we expect to actually have the same distinct three sick days just by chance, like Ulla has, what we can do is 250,000 times 0.5% to the power of 3, and the expectation value is actually close to 0. So likely there's no other entities with these three sick days, so likely Ulla is already re-identified. So what's interesting here is that we only used information that Ulla's employer easily has access to. And we're only using two assumptions. The first of them is that the dataset leaks in some way. I mean, data leaks all the time. There's no reason to believe that Simula knows how to protect data better than any other institution that has been losing data in the last years. And the other assumption is that Ulla's employer has an installation of Python and knows some data analytics. And if that happened, if I were Ola's employer, maybe I would check what these Thursday appointments are, if that's actually a therapist. So you could dive into that and try to figure out if that's maybe really some sort of doctor and Ola might become sick in the future. That's something employers might be interested in before giving out promotions. So you see that having access to this data set and being able to know who is who in the data set might really have serious consequences for individuals. In my paper, I have a bunch of other ways. I describe a lot of attack vectors to link external data to the data set. So you don't even need to check on social media when somebody downloaded the app and hope there's photos of it. If, for example, the database of the Google Play Store or the Apple App Store leaked, they precisely record when somebody downloaded a specific app. So if you see somebody downloaded the app from the Google Play Store, you know that they have an Android phone and that the first contact registered should most likely pop up on the same day or the day afterwards. Also, I've talked a bit about the family or household structure. Norway has crazy amounts of data about their own population, including a population registry. And if you got access to that, you could just look up who's living in a household with exactly 5 people, for example. I asked the medical laboratory for a copy of my data, and they actually sent me data about my positive or negative COVID-19 tests in 2020. They didn't delete that. So that's still available. If you get access to the data, of course, if you have a positive test, you would most likely isolate for 10 or 14 days, and you would see that in the data. You could just link that to a positive test right before that period. Same with train and plane tickets, or if you just know some of your friends has been on a vacation, you would, of course, see that contacts with the family continue to exist while other contacts, travel contacts, pop up. And I've already explained how employee registers and sick days can be used to figure out or to reduce the number of candidate entities. So to conclude, we consider it reasonably likely that individuals can be re-identified from the datasets. And the recital 26 to the GDPR says what that means. To check whether some means are reasonably likely to be used to identify somebody, you should take account of all objective factors, for example, the cost and the amount of time required for such an identification. Also considering available technology now and technological developments in the future. So I can say none of these attack vectors I'm describing is particularly costly or time intensive, and all of that can be done with a laptop and Python. So therefore, I argue that the dataset should not be considered anonymized or anonymous, but rather should be considered personal data. So of course, from a legal perspective, it's not up to me, but up to Datatilsynet, the Norwegian Data Protection Authority, to decide the legal status. But we made a couple of good arguments for that the GDPR should apply here, and that similar or FHI or whomever is responsible right now needs to provide a legal base for the continued existence of the dataset, if they can. Well, and this is Erna Solberg in a Facebook comment, the Prime Minister of Norway, who promises all data to be deleted after 30 days. Well, it would be nice if they just did that right now. It's been over a year now, over 2 years, yeah. So, in my paper, I didn't only write about Max Mustermann or Ola Norman, but also about Erna Solberg, the Norwegian Prime Minister, who behaved in a, well, not entirely common way. First of all, I've already shown you that. She posted on social media with her phone on the first day of the app's availability, which we can use to re-identify her if we get access to the data. She's also dancing with nurses on TikTok and reopening schools. So she really has an unusual contact pattern, I would say. And if we got access to the data, let it be through a data leak or, for example, by another request under the Norwegian Information Freedom Law, I think that could be possible. I think we got a lot of attack vectors that would make it possible to successfully de-anonymize Erna Solberg, the Norwegian Prime Minister here. So let's hope the data has been deleted before that actually happens. But thank you for attending, and now we're open for questions.
And I do have the question. So this data was already deleted twice, and you are asking it to be deleted a third time now. Like what? Like how can they do that? Like what was the first two attempts, and why wasn't it deleted actually? So.
Well, first of all, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes, you can. Perfect. Well, there's a bit of a backstory, because that data wasn't only collected for that purpose of contact tracing, but they also wanted to use it for scientific purposes. That's why they said we're also going to anonymize it and use it for research purposes without the possibility to opt in or to opt out. And apparently they just forgot about that anonymized data or just didn't consider it at all. So what they said in the first place when the app was in operation was after 30 days, all of it is going to be deleted. But apparently that didn't include the anonymized data. And then when they got the message from the Norwegian Data Protection Authority, the same thing happened again. So FHI, the Norwegian Institute of Public Health, they said, yeah, we're going to delete everything. And then I got access to internal emails between that research institute, Simula, and the Norwegian Institute of Public Health under this information freedom law. And, well, they're just really sloppy. Let me phrase it that way. So they just ask, well, we're still sitting on that anonymous data. Can we just publish it to other researchers? And the Norwegian, the FHI answers, well, I don't know. I didn't get a lot of feedback here, but I guess even though we deleted it, you can just decide it for yourself. So given that one in three people from Norway are included in that data, what I would have wished for was that FHI, first of all, checked whether the anonymization actually worked, or just said, well, we promised the people to delete it, so we expect from you to do the same thing. But for me, it seems that in Norway in general, but especially in this case, there's a lack of awareness for how dangerous personal data can be. And I guess my paper could be a contribution to change that.
Did you have a link or something to your research on the slides?
Not on the slides, but if you look for that netspolitik.org article, there's a direct link to the PDF of the paper.
Right. Okay. And then we have a question from the interwebs. So, and everyone who's watching now, feel free to say your question on the RTC stream matrix channel or RTC 2020 on IRC, which you will find below the stream. Or for people in the audience, you can also use the microphone here and to say your questions. And one question that we have here is, did the Norwegian authorities have any problems with this research?
Well, at least nobody contacted me and told me not to do it. I'm not sure. You probably asked for the public reaction or something like that. And I'm still waiting for the Norwegian Data Protection Authority to actually comment. They seem to have a lot to do recently, and I'm not sure if they've actually read the paper, but at the moment I'm preparing a formal complaint to the Data Protection Authority, since I personally believe that this is a breach of the GDPR for a couple of different reasons. So I guess there might be consequences in the future as soon as the Norwegian Data Protection Authority finds the time to actually work on that case.
All right. And then what comes to my mind? So okay, you have the same data protection laws, but how about like? Can you say something about like how more open or less open the Norwegian Freedom of Information Act is?
I mean, that's two quite different things, and often they are conflicting with each other, right? The information freedom law usually says the state has to publish whatever documents or data they have, and then you need to find a way to reconcile these two laws with each other. And that apparently hasn't happened in Norway yet. So there's weird cases where you can just ask the school for the email addresses of all the students, and that's apparently legal because of the very strong information freedom law. And apparently nobody has noticed yet that that's in conflict with the GDPR. And it looks like nobody cares. So, yeah, it's a weird situation.
All right. So do you have any further, apart from checking what will happen to this research that you did, are there any further steps that you intend to do?
Not in the moment, actually. So as I said, it might be possible to request a copy of the data under Norwegian Information Freedom Law. I'm not actually intending to do that because I'm having some ethical difficulties with possessing that data. I just personally want that data to be deleted, actually. But as I said, what I'm planning to do is filing a formal complaint with the Data Protection Authority so that they might reinforce my wish.
So now this would be, I think, the one more chance for the interwebs. If you have any questions, that you can say them now, because at the moment I don't see any question here in the audience, and I don't think we don't have any more question in the interwebs. So if you are interested in more of the fallout of that research or what else Hang does, I think you have some contact info probably somewhere, or you can also find the Netzpolitik article. And then I would say thank you very much, Der Hagen, and let us know if there's anything more to talk about. And so thank you very much.
Well, thank you for inviting me, and have some great days in Potsdam.
We will have. Thanks.